Hello, my name is Steve Elzinga, and I'm going to be your host in this introduction to Enterprise. At the time of this taping, we're just beginning this new program. We hope to have business experts that we interview, people that actually are out there in the business world doing enterprise. And you may wonder why then I am doing the first course here, the introduction to enterprise. I'm a pastor, as many of you know, in a church, and I work here at Christian Leaders Institute. So what do I know about enterprise? And maybe the question that you have is, what does this have to do with Christian Leaders Institute? I think that you are probably one of two different people. Maybe you're a person of enterprise. You have a business or you're employed somewhere, but you want to spend more time in ministry. You want some of the things that you do to have eternal consequences. And so you're starting to take courses at Christian Leaders Institute, and you hope to do more and more ministry. Well, this whole enterprise degree and this program and this course is then to help you do your enterprise better so that you can have more time and energy for missions and ministry. Or perhaps you're a person who really wants to do ministry. You'd love to do full-time ministry, make that your actual occupation. But so far that hasn't happened, and maybe it won't happen in the foreseeable close future here. Maybe you can start part-time or something like that. We're going to talk about that in a later video, how you can perhaps even get a job like that. But the need for Christian leaders is so great, and the resources to pay all of these leaders is not there. And so if we're going to actually succeed at the mission God calls us, we're going to need people who do ministry on the one hand, but also take care of their own needs and their family's needs. So you might be a person in business wanting to do more ministry, or you might be a person in ministry who needs to make a little money, at least on the side. And hopefully this course is for you. So why would I teach this class? I've been in ministry, full-time ministry, for many years. Currently, I'm 50% time at my church, or at least my church pays me 50%. I work here a little bit at Christian Leaders Institute as well. But the rest of my income actually comes from my enterprises. I have several enterprises that I'll talk to you in some later things. Videos. I was raised in an enterprising home. My father probably started 18 different businesses. He was very entrepreneurish. As a kid, I remember driving around, and he would see a farmer out in the field in a tractor, and he'd flag him down, and he would start asking him about the field and what he was growing and what the yield was and how much it cost to rent an acre. And he was just curious about everything. When he saw problems in our society, his mind always went to, how are people making money off from this problem? When I was 5 years old, I had a bank account with my father, and we kept track of the little things that we made. You know, I think he was paying us a penny a weed to pull in the yard, and then we would record it in the book. I learned very early what interest was and how interest works. My father, taught us the value of money, what it really means, what things really cost, that when you buy something at the store, it is not the price that you pay. There's the getting there and back. There's the transportation costs and how much a car really does cost you. And then there's the taxes that you had to pay on the money off the top. And so anyway, my point is I grew up in a culture of money and how money works. I thought everyone grew up like that, and I thought everyone understood how money works. But since becoming an adult and running into different people and being the pastor of a church, I realized that most people didn't grow up the way I grew up. And some of the things that I took for granted, the things that I understood about how money works, a lot of people just don't understand. So I think I am a perfect choice here for this introduction class. You know, all the complexities of enterprise we'll leave to the experts in enterprise. But I'm sort of that mixture of enterprise and ministry, which is probably where most of you are at. So in this introductory video, I just want to ask basic questions about this word enterprise. Maybe it's a new word for you. What does it even mean? What is enterprise? So from a theoretical point of view, enterprise is a project or an undertaking, typically one that is difficult or requires effort. Some synonyms are undertaking, endeavor, venture, exercise, activity, operation, task, business, proceeding, scheme, plan, program, campaign. So there, all these words give you a little taste of what it takes to get involved in enterprise. It's not something that's easy. It's something that's difficult and requires effort. If it's not difficult and it doesn't require effort, it's probably one of these quick, rich schemes that usually ends in failure. Number two, initiative and resourcefulness is part of this word enterprise. Some synonyms, imagination, entrepreneurism, ingenuity, inventiveness, originality, creativity, cleverness, enthusiasm, dynamism, drive, ambition, energy, boldness, daring, courage, leadership, get up and go, oomph. And notice all these words that relate to enterprise also relate to ministry. You have to have these same qualities, and that's why enterprise and ministry can be very closely related. If you don't have drive, ambition, energy, boldness, daring, courage, leadership, get up and go, and oomph, in your ministry, then your ministry won't go anywhere either. So the same qualities that you need to do ministry are also the same qualities that you need to do enterprise. Number three, a business or a company. That's generally how people tend to think of an enterprise. An enterprise is a business or starting a business or getting a business going or helping a business thrive and succeed. And it can be a big business. It can be a small little thing that you're doing. What is enterprise from a practical point of view? All those are sort of theoretical things, but from a practical point of view, enterprise is all the ways and means that people employ, engage in to make money. So I want to talk just a little bit about money. What is money? Money is primarily a medium of exchange or means of exchange. It is a way for a person to trade what he has for what he wants. Now, in human history, money hasn't always existed. Before people invented this thing called money, there was just bartering or trading. I need someone to make a fence for me. So then I go find someone that knows how to make a fence. But he's not going to do this for free, so I have to pay him something. And let's say I'm a shoemaker. So I'm going to go to the guy that knows how to make a fence, and I'm going to say, hey, I'll make you a pair of shoes if you build my fence. And if he needs shoes, it works out perfectly. I have what you want, and you have what I want, and we can just exchange our work. The problem with the barter system is, I go to the guy that knows how to make a fence, but he doesn't need shoes. He needs something else. So now I got to find someone that makes that something else, and then we have to, and it gets really complicated. It's complicated because we don't have a common denominator for which we can all trade for the same thing. And in our modern culture, we all live such different lives. In the ancient cultures, people were, let's say, farmers, and everyone had the exact same needs. So in the United States, we have an Amish community that still lives like 100 years ago, and they're all farmers, and they all need a barn. So they all come and help and build your barn, and then they come and help and build someone else's barn. And it works because they all want and need the exact same thing so they can barter and trade for it. But in our modern culture, people have so many different jobs, we don't even know where to begin. So what money does is it takes all the different jobs and we translate all those jobs. So if I make shoes, we translate that into money. And if someone builds a fence, we translate that building of the fence into money. And we figured out over time what is worth what. How many hours does each one take? Who's skilled, who is unskilled, and how much should they get paid? So we've virtually taken every occupation, every task, every product, every service, and we've sort of made it into one common language, which is the language of money. And because everything is a common language, we can now talk to each other. We can trade with anyone. We convert whatever it is you do into money. That person that you want to trade with converts it into a money, and we can now exchange. It makes it so much easier. Recently, my father died 3 weeks ago, and we had all the stuff that he has in his house, and you know, we're going to give some away. But we also I have three other siblings, so there's four of us, and then we have all the grandkids. And so we tried to figure out how we can divide this, and we needed a common denominator. We need a language with which to do this. So some suggested we use the emotional language. Everyone goes around and says, well, this book, you know, was very important to me. You know, I remember my father reading it, and I have all this history with it. So I'm using the currency of emotion. And so now you tell a better story, and so maybe you get it because you have a better story. And I said, well, let's not use emotion as the common language that we share these things with, because some people are better at telling the story than others, or some are more bold and some are less bold, and then emotion is the thing that we're using, and then people get hurt and upset. I said, let's just use money. Let's just put we bid on everything. And if you really want it because you're emotionally attached to it, then you bid more. And that's exactly what we did, and it worked beautifully, because money is a good common denominator that you can take your emotion and you can translate it. You can take your work, you can take your effort, and it can be translated into money. So what's the purpose of money? I mean, why do we even bother with this whole thing? The number one purpose is to provide for your family. 1 Timothy 5:8. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, especially for members of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So, number one, you work, you do this enterprise, maybe you're doing ministry, but you have to take care of your family. You have a wife, perhaps, or a few kids. Someone needs to take care of them. Number two, to teach dependence on God. Money can teach dependence on God. Deuteronomy 8:10. When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I'm giving to you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. He led you through the vast, dreadful wilderness, that thirsty and waterless land with its venomous snakes and scorpions. He brought you water out of the hard rock. He gave you manna to eat in the wilderness, something your ancestors had never known, to humble and test you so that in the end it might go well with you. You may say to yourself, my power and my strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me.
But remember, the Lord your God, for it is he
who gives you the ability to produce wealth and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your ancestors as it is today. It teaches. Money can teach you dependence on God. Now, often it teaches you dependence when you lack money. But this verse is suggesting that even when you make money, When you make money, you should realize that it wasn't you. God has given you the ability and the opportunities that are before you. He is responsible. What is the purpose of money? Number three, to teach the true cost of goods and services and the true value of work. I mentioned I was raised by a father who, you know, had a keen sense of what money is and how it works. So when I was 5, 6 years old, and I had a brother that was 1 year younger, my dad would find work for us to do around the house. We had to pick weeds, for example, out of the yard. And he'd give us a penny a weed. We had to count them out and bundle them and hand them to him, and then he'd write it down on a piece of paper. I remember the first purchase I made, my father came home with 2 baseball gloves. Baseball is a pretty popular sport in the United States. And he came home, my brother was left-handed and I was right-handed, and he came home one day with a left-handed glove and a right-handed glove, but he didn't give them to us. He said, I have these 2 baseball gloves and they will cost you $2. Now, they probably cost more than $2, but he was going to sell us those baseball gloves. And he sort of marketed them to us. He said, now, you can buy them or not buy them, but it's a good deal. And if you don't buy them, I'll sell these baseball gloves to some of the neighborhood kids. So it's up to you. Well, of course, we bought those gloves. Now, every time we use that glove, we realize that to own this glove costs 200 weeds that you got to pick. In other words, I understood the value of the money that I used to get the mitt, because I realized how many weeds that I had to pick to get the money to get the glove. So a glove is not just a glove. A glove is all the work that it took to get the $2 to get the glove. Money is there to teach you the value of your work and how hard it is, and to not just waste it and not just throw it away. And we'll talk more about that in another video, the true value of what money is and what money isn't. What is the purpose of money? Number 4, to support other people's needs to provide for their families. Ephesians 4:28. Anyone who has been stealing must steal no longer. Okay, now you're taking from people. But must work hard doing something useful with their own hands, that they may have something to share with those in need. So the 4th purpose of money is not for you and not for your family, but to share with others who have needs too. 2 Thessalonians 3:10. For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule, the one who is unwilling to work shall not eat. And I put that verse there because in Ephesians it says, you know, that you should do something useful with your hands so that you can share with others. Sharing with others doesn't necessarily mean just handing them money. Okay, my father had that idea, you know, when we were young. He didn't just hand us money. He didn't say, well, here's the $2, I'm going to buy you the mitt. No, how he shared with those in need, which was his own kids, is he provided an opportunity to make the money. So Paul says, you know, Paul had these people who just wanted a handout. He said, no, if you're not willing to work, then you're not going to eat. That working somehow goes with that. So the complexity of trying to help someone, I make money, but I don't want to just hand it to someone. You know, sometimes that's what's needed. It's an emergency. People need it, and you just give it. But in the long run, how do I help people ultimately make their own money? So how do I use my money, my opportunities, to help others do the same in their own lives? What is the purpose of money? To support the kingdom work, God's kingdom. God is making something happen, and we make money in order to support those things. Exodus 36. And the people continued to bring free will offerings morning after morning. They were building, you know, the tabernacle at that time. So all the skilled workers who were doing all the work on the sanctuary left what they were doing and said to Moses, the people are bringing more than enough for doing the work the Lord commanded to be done. I just love this whole section. And Moses gave an order. And they sent this word throughout the camp. No man or woman is to make anything else as an offering for the sanctuary. And so the people were restrained from bringing more because what they already had was more than enough to do all the work. Can you imagine? Can you imagine in a church where the pastor gets up and says, all right, we're going to stop the offering because we've got too much? I've never heard of that. But isn't that the way it should be? We're here on this planet because God is trying to do something in his kingdom, and he gives us the ability to do stuff and work and get this money. And the whole point of being here is God's kingdom and his work. Why are we ever short of money for God's kingdom? 1 Chronicles 29:14. And yet, who am I? And who are my people that we should be in a position to make voluntary offerings like this? For everything is from you, and we have given to you what comes from your own hand. I mean, the writer here is just, you know, it's incredible that we have the opportunity to make money that we can now give back to you because it's yours already. It's a whole different way of thinking about money. Proverbs 3:9-10. Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. What are the first fruits? It's the first part of the harvest. In other words, you're giving God his share before you even know whether you're going to get yours. You have to trust that the rest is going to come. And then what will happen? Then your barns will be filled to overflowing and your vats will brim over with new wine. If you put God first, then God will bless you. Number 6, what is the purpose of money? To measure your success in meeting the needs of the people around you. Money is a good way to keep track of things. It's an accounting kind of thing. Here in 2 Chronicles, every year King Solomon received over 25 tons of gold, in addition to the taxes paid by the traders and merchants. King Solomon also had 4,000 stalls for his chariots and horses and had 12,000 cavalry horses. Some of them he kept in Jerusalem, the rest he stationed in various other cities. In other words, things were counted. And if you notice in the money world, things are counted. You go to the bank and they tell you, you know, this is how much you have. When you have expenses, you can write them down, you can subtract. It's a math kind of thing, and it's very exact. When you play a sport, if you're playing soccer or football, as it's called around the world, we keep score. And when the goal goes in, the ball goes in, we give you a one. And then the other side, they get a one, and we keep track. And because we can keep track, you know, the stands are going crazy. It's 1-1, and there's only 5 minutes left, and the next person's score is probably going to win. That's the way money is, too. It's very, you can keep track. I just have gone through my father's stuff, and he kept track of what his, everything that, you know, every month he had what he was worth, his assets, everything that he was making, all his expenses, and he added it and subtracted it, and there was a bottom line. And he could compare, you know, 1 month's bottom line with the previous bottom line. And we'll talk about some of the dangers of money because of that whole thing. But it helps you keep track of what you're actually doing. Well, how is money made? How do you make money? Basically, there's three ways. Number one, selling products. You have something that you made, something that you buy, and now you're selling to others at a higher price. There's some product that you're selling. Or number two, we offer services. You know, if I paint your house, then you'll pay me so much money. So it's something that we do for people. And the third way to make money is by investing in other people's products and services. So now you're just taking your money and trying to help somebody else out, and then they pay you a little bit from what they make. Well, how does one acquire money made? You know, there's money out there. People have made it. How do I get some of that? Number one is inheritance. My father died. He left some money, so there's inheritance. You can, you know, get that because of the work of someone else. Number two, most people are employees. They work for someone else, and they're either salaried, where they get, you know, this is what they get every 2 weeks, and they're supposed to do certain things, but the hours are sort of, you know, here or there. A lot of salaried people actually do more than 40 hours a week, or hourly. A lot of people just, you know, you put in an hour, this is what you get paid per hour. Number three, people acquire money through their spouse. You know, my wife works a little bit, and the money that she makes goes into our account. I know there's some spouses that keep it separate, but I'm a firm believer that, you know, if you're married together, you know, hers is mine, mine is hers. We're in this together, and you really have to be on the same page in terms of money. By the way, fights over money is probably the number one thing that people break up in their marriages over. Because it has to do with your values and what you're trying to do in life. I was raised in a family that understood the value of money. My father very early on said, you know, I was living in the country in my first church, and it was like a 10-mile drive to town, and sometimes we would drive, you know, to town and go to McDonald's. And my father very quickly said, okay, you know how much that costs? It's 10 miles to town and 10 miles back. It costs you 50 cents a mile to drive your car. So that's $10 to drive to the town and back, plus whatever you bought at McDonald's. He said, you know what? You could just buy a T-bone steak next time you're in the store, since you're there already, and it will be cheaper than going to McDonald's. So I understood very early on the value of money, and I married someone who came from a family that was exactly the same. So my wife and I, we know how hard it is to earn it, so we don't spend it, and we're on the same page with that. Some husbands and wives are on totally different pages. Someone believes in saving, someone believes in spending, and then it's a never-ending fight. Number four, the fourth way to acquire money is through investments. Investments are where you invest in somebody else's activity. They want money to do whatever they're doing, and they, in a sense, borrow from you. You become like a bank. When you go and borrow money from a bank, the bank gives you the money, but then it charges you a certain interest. So we'll talk more about that, too. Benjamin Franklin once said, a penny saved is a penny earned. Saving money is equally as good as making money. And every dime that you save is actually money that you've made. And so we'll talk about how you can save and how you can be the one who makes the interest instead of paying the interest. Number five, you can acquire money by business. Business, again, is you're either selling a goods or a product that you have, or that you have access to, or that you make, or that you acquire at a wholesale price and selling it at a higher price, or it's a service. You know, you paint houses, and I will come, I will offer you this thing that I will do for you in exchange for money. So those are the ways, basic ways of how to acquire money. Well, what does all this have to do with students at Christian Leaders Institute? Sounds like more of a business class. Again, number one, some of you want to work in Christian ministry, but you will not, at least at first, be paid. And you need to take care of you and your family. And so the better you can manage your own money, the better you can save money, the better you can have a plan for your life, and the more money that you can make on the side, the more time that you will have for ministry. If you don't take care of your family and you're running around doing ministry, people will see right through that. They will see that, yeah, you talk about love and caring, but you don't even take care of your own family. So that's something you have to do. Or number two, some of you are in business already, but you really want to spend as much time as you can in ministry, and so you want to learn how to do business better. If you could do the business that you're doing right now better, then you could have more free time to actually do ministry. So I think it's going to be interesting. Some of you maybe were raised in a family like I was, and you know some of these things. It will be good review for you. But I know many of you were not raised like I was, and so some of the things that I just took for granted my whole life will be new things for you. So I think it will make a tremendous difference in your family and maybe in your whole outlook. I hope that when you're finished with this class, you'll be encouraged, that you'll see more hope and more opportunity to do ministry in the future.